Good morning, I'm Tommy Howe, and welcome to another edition of Tree Huggers International, a weekly natural science and environmental affairs program dedicated to the preservation of parks, wilderness, and special places. From the beaches to the mountains to the deserts, this is Tree Huggers International. Be careful and use this show with caution, because you might just learn something. The stature of John Muir in American conservation cannot be overstated, and his role in protecting Yosemite and other sites throughout the American West makes him, according to Muir's biographer, Stephen J. Holmes, quote, one of the patron saints of 20th century American environmental activity, unquote. Indeed, the volume of schools and sites named for John Muir throughout California leaves no doubt of the importance of his legacy on the Golden State and also here in the West. But as Muir aged and became recognized for his lifetime of conservation work, he entered into one of the last great battles of his career, and it was a battle which many would argue hastened the end of Muir's amazing life. The location was the Hetch Hetchy Valley in Yosemite National Park, and the fight was over the dam proposed to be built there by the city and county of San Francisco following the 1906 earthquake. Often referred to as a rival in beauty and stature to Yosemite Valley, the Hetch Hetchy Valley was created over millions of years by the drainage of the Tuolumne River. Writing about Hetch Hetchy, John Muir said, quote, no holier temple has ever been consecrated by the heart of man, unquote. Unfortunately, despite Muir's words of high praise and protests to the federal government and warnings about how building a dam at Hetch Hetchy and damming the Tuolumne River would forever violate the sanctity of the idea of a national park, the will of San Francisco's business community held sway in Congress, which enabled the construction of O'Shaughnessy Dam in 1913. The following year, John Muir died. Restore Hetch Hetchy is a San Francisco-based organization which seeks to return the Hetch Hetchy Valley to its natural condition while continuing to meet the water and power needs of all the communities which depend upon the Tuolumne River. And one of the ways which Restore Hetch Hetchy gets their message out about their mission is through their annual Muir's March event, a multi-day trek through the backcountry of the Sierra Nevada and Yosemite National Park, which culminates in a rally atop the O'Shaughnessy Dam at Hetch Hetchy. And this year's Muir's March will happen July 29th to August 4th. And joining us today to talk all about this year's Muir's March is the executive director of Restore Hetch Hetchy, Mike Marshall. Mike, thank you for joining us today. Glad we could finally have you on Tree Huggers International. And thank you very much for welcoming us into your office in San Francisco to record the program today. Thanks very much.
Absolutely, Tommy. It's great to have you here.
So let's start the conversation this morning with how long Restore Hetch Hetchy has been around. How long has it been active?
The organization was founded in 1999 at the suggestion of the late David Brower. And it was a task force within the Sierra Club, and the Sierra Club has groups and chapters and task forces. And the feeling was is that it wasn't getting, this single advocacy issue wasn't getting the attention that it deserved. And David suggested to the folks that were involved to break it off and create an independent 501c3. And that's what happened in 1999.
With dams coming down on the Elwha River and Olympic National Park, and the possibility of dams coming down on the Klamath and Snake Rivers, how receptive is the city of San Francisco to the idea of draining the reservoir and restoring the Hetch Hetchy Valley?
Well, it depends on who you talk to. I think the voters of San Francisco have open ears and an open mind to the idea. The status quo, the bureaucracy, City Hall are very much opposed to it. They've sort of dug in their heels and don't really want to even consider change. And that's the challenge we have. And it's really the opportunity we have, because we get that restoring Hetch Hetchy can't happen in a vacuum. It has to happen in tandem with San Francisco reforming its 19th century water system. And so engaging in that debate and saying to San Franciscans, look, we may do a lot of good things environmentally, but when it comes to water, we're behind Orange County, we're behind Los Angeles, we're last in the state. And so engaging in a debate that has the reward of restoring the Tuolumne River and restoring Hetch Hetchy Valley in Yosemite, it's a very positive one, and I think one that the voters are going to respond to.
You know, you mentioned Orange County, and Orange County has been doing water recycling for quite a long time now, very successfully. As I understand it, the city of San Francisco does not have any water recycling programs of significance. Is that correct?
Not of significance at all.
At all.
They have some on the drawing board, but it's I think within 5 years they're hoping to do about 2 million gallons a day. Orange County does 92 million gallons a day. They're two very different places. Let's be really clear about that. We live on a peninsula, and we have a certain set of limitations relative to the aquifer and things. And when you recycle water, those are all considerations. But that's not the issue here. The issue is a lack of will to reform the water system and actually create more sustainable water supplies.
Is it true the O'Shaughnessy Dam is not subject to federal oversight because of the deal which facilitated its construction, or is it the antiquity of the dam?
It's the antiquity of it. So the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission wasn't created until after the Raker Act was passed, which is what allowed for the dam to be built in Yosemite. And no one's ever gone back and actually made that requirement. So whereas other dams throughout the country on a 50-year basis have to be relicensed, and when they do that, you get to look at, you know, what are the environmental benefits of perhaps modifying the dam or removing the dam. That is not the case here with the O'Shaughnessy Dam.
Is there a silt issue with the dam that you know of?
There's not. There's very little silt behind the dam because it's primarily a big granite bowl. The valley was clear cut before they built the dam. The water is so cold that those tree stumps on the valley floor are still in place, you know, 80 years later. There is a sediment issue in that Hetch Hetchy Valley was a sacred place. The Tuolumne River Canyon and following the Tuolumne River was the primary human corridor from the east side of the Sierras to the western side of the Sierra for thousands of years. And Hetch Hetchy Valley was a sacred place for Native American tribes. And those heritage sites were not removed or moved prior to the flooding of the valley. And so the assumption is that within the sediment are significant Native American remains. So although there's not a lot of sediment, the sediment that's there is going to have to be handled with extreme care and sensitivity and inclusion relative to the Native American tribes.
You know, even for 1913, when the Raker Act was passed and the flooding of Hetch Hetchy was approved, this project broke every rule and ideal which national parks were intended to protect places like Hetch Hetchy from. Can you talk a bit about the precedent was set, even if it only happened once
right.
on this scale?
So it was the first national environmental battle. You know, the Sierra Club was a nice little outings club, and John Muir was a great naturalist author, but this made them, it made John Muir an activist, and it made the Sierra Club a national activist organization. 200 newspapers editorialized against building this dam back in 1913, before photography was a part of newspapers. It was mostly based on writings of people like Muir and poets and other things, and paintings. But it was part of a larger national conversation about, okay, up till then our prevailing value system was, let's maximally exploit the environment for the benefit of man, and as you said earlier, business, really. And there was a whole element of Americans coming along and saying, well, wait, hold on a second. We have these beautiful natural places, these sacred places, in fact. We came up with the idea of a national park system. There was very little infrastructure involved in it. And it was this real national debate between unbridled development and let's begin to protect the natural resources we have. And unfortunately, we lost the Battle of Hetch Hetchy, but out of it came the Organic Act and the creation of the National Park Service and funding for our national parks. And you don't see a dam or a reservoir in any national parks today that didn't already exist before they became a national park. And so if your listeners have seen the Ken Burns series on national parks, you'll see that Hetch Hetchy played a huge role throughout the history of the national park system relative to, let's remember Hetch Hetchy. And that's the beautiful symmetry of our effort now of removing this. It's just as the battle back then had impacts far beyond the boundaries of Yosemite, our ability to restore it will have an impact far beyond the boundaries of Yosemite and beyond California, frankly.
Let's talk a bit about the reaction of San Francisco city officials and others, and you kind of alluded to this a moment ago, but the reaction to restore Hetch Hetchy's intents and goals. The city attorney of San Francisco denounced your organization's position. Is that correct?
That's the city attorney, and last week the mayor called us stupid and insane. The hyperbole coming
stupid
out.
Stupid and insane.
Yeah, and Partly we have we're placing a ballot initiative before the voters this coming November, which doesn't require the city to take any action other than to create a planning process, to go through a planning process of creating a more sustainable water system. So beginning to recycle water, go back to using some groundwater that we used before we had access to the water from Hetch Hetchy Reservoir. And then a planning process for increasing flows on the Tuolumne River and returning the Hetch Hetchy Valley back to the Park Service so it can be restored. Doesn't require an outcome, just a planning process that we then would bring back to the voters for approval in 4 years. And there is a degree of disdain by the city's general manager, the water company, as well as the mayor, for letting the voters participate in that conversation and make those decisions. And I think they're so wedded to the status quo, and there's such a lack of imagination for what's possible and a complete lack of appreciation for the fact that no other city in the country has the benefit that San Francisco has of occupying a national park and using it as a water storage facility.
How much of the Tuolumne River reaches San Francisco's showers and faucets? And how much of the Tuolumne River is sold to other communities or water districts or irrigation districts?
Right. So that's where it's a little complicated. So Turlock and Modesto irrigation districts, they have senior water rights to San Francisco. And so even though San Francisco takes their water on the river first, they have to allow enough water down the river to meet Turlock and Modesto's needs, and then they take what's left. So between those three agencies, they remove 60% of the Tuolumne River before it gets to the San Joaquin River, which would explain why the salmon population has virtually disappeared from the river. Now, San Francisco, they only take 1/3 of that, but in turn, they only use 1/3 of what they take, and then they sell 2/3 of it to San Mateo and Santa Clara and a little bit in Alameda counties.
San Francisco's got a quote-unquote water bank in the Don Pedro Reservoir,
right,
south of Sonora, kind of in LaGrange. And as I understand it, that holds twice as much volume as Hetch Hetchy. So even with the water rights on the Tuolumne retained, the water still ends up in the Don Pedro Reservoir, correct?
Yes. So the idea of the water bank is that in dry years, San Francisco could release less water, and there's already water in the reservoir that then Turlock Modesto use. So, yes, it's significantly more storage space than Hetch Hetchy is. It could be converted to storage instead of a water bank. But that's a political issue, and that would require a great deal of negotiation between Turlock, Modesto, and San Francisco, which they don't have a good track record on necessarily getting along.
Well, and San Francisco got a real sweetheart deal with the whole arrangement in 1913. But what about some of the surrounding communities, say, across the Bay? I mean, Oakland, Berkeley, Vallejo, Richmond, are they doing anything to collect rainfall or recharge their groundwater supplies?
Well, I think all communities are doing a lot more relative to utilizing their groundwater. San Francisco used to pump 14.5 million gallons a day back in 1930 before the system came online and Tuolumne River started to be delivered to the city. Today, we use less than 3. And as a percentage of our total water supply, it's less than 1%. I think most other communities are starting to see a significant increase in the use of groundwater and allowing groundwater to recharge. You know, we had a lot of rain here over the weekend, and virtually all of it is dumped into the sewage system and treated with chemicals and then dumped in the bay. I was just reading how New York City, which has a very similar system, is investing over the next 20 years in a system of you know, green roofs and water storage, rainwater storage and everything else in a way that San Francisco doesn't even have the goal of doing. New York wants to divert 40% of rainwater to use it in some way in the next 20 years. San Francisco has no such goal. We are continuing to focus exclusively on the Tuolumne River watershed as well as two watersheds that surround the city.
So the heels are dug in as far as the water use is concerned.
The heels are dug in with the elected officials and the bureaucrats. I don't think that's true with the voters, and that's what this November's ballot initiative is all about.
If you're just joining us, this is Tree Huggers International. I'm Tommy Howe. We're recording the show on location today in San Francisco at the headquarters of Restore Hetch Hetchy, and we're talking to Mike Marshall, the executive director of Restore Hetch Hetchy, an organization which seeks the return of the Hetch Hetchy Valley to its natural condition while continuing to meet the water and power needs of all the communities which depend upon the Tuolumne River. The Hetch Hetchy Valley in Yosemite National Park was flooded in 1913 to build the O'Shaughnessy Dam. And we're talking about this year's annual MIRS March event. It's happening July 29th through August 4th as Restore Hetch Hetchy boosters and supporters walk in the footsteps of John Muir to raise awareness and resources for the campaign to restore the Hetch Hetchy Valley. More information on this year's MIRS March can be found at MIRSMARCH.org. M-U-I-R-S March. MIRSMARCH.org. And the root website for Restore Hetch Hetchy is hetchhetchy.org. 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 You can also call Restore Hetch Hetchy for more information at 415-956-0401. It's fair to say there are a lot of political heavyweights, not only in California, but also in Washington, who would like this matter to go away.
There's one political heavyweight. Senator Feinstein is vehemently opposed to even having a conversation about restoring Hetch Hetchy. That said, I think many of her colleagues are sort of on the sidelines of this and would like to be engaged and like to see the Park Service take Hetch Hetchy Valley back while protecting San Francisco's interests. And I really want to be clear here. I'm a San Franciscan. And San Francisco needs to be kept whole in this process. 85% of our water comes from the Tuolumne River, and although we could be better stewards of that water and probably reduce that amount, it will always be our primary source of water, and that's fine. We should just store it elsewhere. People need to understand it's not about taking water away, it's about moving storage. And I think that once Senator Feinstein is enlightened and turns the corner, that you'll see a lot of people get off the bench and into the game relative to launching what will be one of the most comprehensive, most exciting ecological restoration projects in history, and it'll be inside a national park.
You found an ally with Congressman Lundgren.
Right.
And he represents a district sort of in the Sierra foothills, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Just east of Sacramento.
Did his interest surprise you?
He's had a longstanding interest. He's been writing and speaking about restoring Hetch Hetchy for the last 10 years. You know, he's a conservative Republican. I'm a lifelong liberal Democrat. My friends are a little surprised that I'm standing shoulder to shoulder with him on this issue. But he and his wife met in Yosemite. They took their kids there every summer for a vacation. His motivation in doing this is all about the fact that he wants to see Yosemite made whole without hurting San Francisco. He's very clear on that fact. And so strange bedfellows, I suppose, is the best way to describe it. But yes, he's sort of taking the lead on this issue.
Have you found some other allies at the state and federal level?
Yeah, well, Senator Lois Wolk up in Sacramento has long been a proponent of this. She held hearings on it in 2006. She got Governor Schwarzenegger to require a comprehensive report be done that the state did. So she has been quite an ally on it.
You mentioned a ballot initiative earlier. Can you talk a bit about that?
It's called the Water Sustainability and Environmental Restoration Planning Act of 2012. It'll be put before the voters this November here in San Francisco. They're the decision makers in this process. As I said, the purpose of it is to require San Francisco to develop a comprehensive plan with budgets and timelines and impacts and everything else over a three-year period of time that would reform the water system and bring it up to the 21st century standards and look at ecological restoration opportunities relative to the Tuolumne River, the San Francisco Bay, and the Hetch Hetchy Valley. The plan would then be brought back to the voters for approval in 2016.
You know, you mentioned the ecological restoration of Hetch Hetchy Valley. I must imagine you're looking at what's going on with the Elwha Dam in Olympic National Park with a great deal of interest.
Yeah, by itself, it's just a demonstration that this can happen and communities can be kept whole. There was a great deal of consensus building that had to go into that. The decision-making process was quite different, however. It is the single largest dam that will have ever been removed. It's about half the size of the O'Shaughnessy Dam.
Does Restore Hetch Hetchy have a vision or formula for what would be a successful restoration of Hetch Hetchy Valley?
there are multiple visions around that. And I think that's important for people to understand. And again, I would send people to our website, HetchHetchy.org. And under the resources tab, you'll see a number of different studies, and they look at various things. The National Park Service, when they did a study, looked at either doing a sort of a benign restoration, which is you just drain the valley and let nature take its course, versus an adaptive restoration strategy where it's managed and focused, and you make sure non-native species are not allowed to come in. The University of Wisconsin did a much more comprehensive look at an adaptive restoration strategy that's quite exciting back in 2004, I believe, and that's on our website. So Restore Hetch Hetchy, we don't have an opinion about how that should be done, primarily because it will ultimately be the decision of the National Park Service. And they have a series of protocols in place where there's a lot of community input and whatever the case may be. I'm guessing it'll be something in between. You know, nature is incredibly resilient. We shouldn't get in its way. At the same time, we can learn an awful lot about ecological restoration in a situation like this. And it'll be an extraordinary opportunity for us, not just for scientists to watch what happens, but via the internet for classes, for kids from kindergarten to 12th grade in their environmental science class to track this valley coming back to life, this extraordinary place in Yosemite National Park, before our eyes, watching meadows come back and trees grow and the river reclaim itself and animals return. It's going to be unbelievably exciting and infuse a whole generation with an enthusiasm for ecological restoration.
How long have you been doing Muir's March? And talk about what it is.
Sure. So this is our fourth year, and it is a fundraiser for Restore Hetch Hetchy, and designed to both raise money and awareness. And if folks have ever done the AIDS Life Cycle bike ride or the breast cancer walk, they're familiar with the format. Basically, you sign up, and then you go out and you raise a certain amount of money depending on how far you're going to hike. And then once you raise your minimum amount of money, you get to go on a incredibly professionally guided backpacking trip or a day hike. We have three opportunities. We have 3 7-day routes that you can choose from. We have 2 4-day routes that you can choose from. And then there's a 1-day hike with camping at Hodgdon Meadows, which is great for families. And they all culminated on August 4th, as you said in your lead-in. We have a big celebration at Hetch Hetchy. But you get to see a part of the backcountry of Yosemite that you might not otherwise see. You don't have to be an experienced backpacker to do it. That's the beauty of it. It's guided. Your meals are prepared. You do have to carry your backpack and your tent and all that sort of stuff. But I did it last year with my sister, who had never backpacked before. She lives in North Carolina. She's 56 years old. She dropped about 25 pounds, get training for it. And we had an extraordinary experience together as a family. And we raised a lot of money for the cause and really saw a place on Earth that, going through the Grand Canyon of the Tuolumne River, that it's just extraordinary. It was an incredible experience. So I would really encourage people to go to our website, muirsmarch.org, and you can see a little videotape about it. If you email us, you know, if you go online and email, we'll set you up, but you can talk on the phone with somebody who did the march last year and can give you advice on what it was like and things like that. We can put you in touch with the guides, the individual guides, so they can talk to you. It's just a wonderful opportunity to be part of the cause and to do something you may not otherwise do.
And it sounds as though you've got some familiar faces from year to year that you see.
Yes, we do. We have sort of recurring Muir's marchers. In past years, Robert Hanna, the great-great-grandson of John Muir, has participated the last 2 years. We had kids as young as 9 on the backpacking trip, and I think the oldest person we've had is 75. So there's no boundaries to who can participate. You definitely have to get yourself in shape, but it's absolutely doable.
And about how many people take part every year?
So it's grown. The first year, I think we had 8 people and 2 guides. And last year, we had 28 backpackers. Mm-hmm. And I think 60 or 70 day hikers the last day. This year we've increased our capacity. We can have upwards of 120 day hikers and probably more. We have 120 campsites. And we're hoping for 50 backpackers. 3 7-day trips and 2 4-day trips. And then the 1-day hike, there's really no limit to the number of people who can participate.
big event at O'Shaughnessy Dam on the last day, the culmination.
Yeah.
Music, food.
Yeah, big picnic. We don't have music because you're not allowed to have a sound system. The Park Service turns out for it. It's an awesome way to visit Hetch Hetchy. It's an awesome way to participate. It's great for kids. They learn a lot. They learn about philanthropy. They learn about, you know, making a commitment. It's really a terrific family opportunity. And we have 4-day and 7-day backpacking routes that are designed specifically for people that want to bring their kids along.
Would you happen to know where those routes take you through the park specifically?
Yeah. So the 7-day routes, one is down the Grand Canyon, the Tuolumne, from Tuolumne Meadows to Hetch Hetchy. The other one starts up on the northeast side of the park. You start outside the park and traverse down some of the most wild part of Yosemite. You'll see very few people on that route. And then this year we've moved one of the other 7-day routes, so it's from the valley to the valley. You hike from Yosemite Valley up to through White Wolf to Hetch Hetchy Valley. And then the 4-day routes are from White Wolf to Hetch Hetchy, and then one is simply you hike from Hetch Hetchy to Tilltill Valley and back. So you go in and back on the same route. And then the day hike is just, you go from the dam to Wapama Falls and back. And it's a 6-mile hike, 3 miles there and 3 miles back. So if you can't do 6 miles, you can only do a mile. You go as far as you want, you turn around, you come back. It's a great opportunity.
And this is July 29th through August the 4th.
Correct.
So you still have some time to...
Absolutely. You can sign up anytime, and it all culminates on August 4th, which is the big celebration. You know, I think like every American, I have become much more aware of the environment, my impact on the environment, and how we have stewarded the environment as a society and as individuals, and trying to reduce our footprint. And so a few years back, when the opportunity to be involved with the campaign around Hetch Hetchy, I for years had worked in the political arena, and this is a political issue. It was a great confluence, and I thought, you know, what a great journey to go on relative to spending my day every day talking about restoring an incredible part of the world and an incredible part of our country. I like it because, yes, it's about getting this valley back and creating a twin to Yosemite Valley that was once one of the most extraordinary places on Earth. But it's about a city looking at a decision that it made 100 years ago that had impacts that it didn't anticipate. And making a decision that, in fact, you know what, we can do better. We don't want to have those impacts anymore. We want to reduce those impacts. We want to change. We need to do it over a period of time. We need to strike more of a balance. For a city like San Francisco, which is one of the major media markets in the country, to have that public debate, and it's going to be a fight, let's be like really honest about it, that's going to have an impact with cities and counties around the state and across the country. And so that, I think, is really, really important. Then the process of restoration is very exciting, too. As I said earlier, watching it come back to life is going to have a value to it that, you know, we're seeing in the Everglades to some extent relative to that. But that's not as comprehensive as this is in a way, and it's so much larger. And Yosemite is such an iconic place. It's not just this is a reservoir in a national park. This is a reservoir in the national park for in many respects. You know, Yosemite is something that's recognized around the world. And so this small battle here in San Francisco is going to have not just a great impact on Yosemite, but a great impact on the environment, I think, for years to come. Obviously, the Sierra Nevada is under threat in many ways because of climate change, because of pollution, because, you know, the world is getting more and more dense relative to human beings. In a specific case, I would direct people when they go to Hetch Hetchy to stand on the O'Shaughnessy Dam and look and listen for bird life. There is virtually none there. Smack dab in the middle of Yosemite, this used to be, Hetch Hetchy Valley was part of migratory bird patterns in a significant way along the West Coast, and there's no bird life there today. And so that has a collateral impact on the rest of the park and frankly the Sierra Nevada, because wildlife doesn't know the boundaries of the park or whatever. The impact is visual, the impact is on the ecosystem, and I think the real opportunity here is to, once we start changing that, and actually see the valley flourish again is going to have a huge collateral impact on the ecosystem.
Do you think you may see the goal of Restore Hetch Hetchy realized in your lifetime?
Oh, I do. Absolutely. We're on the right side of history here. San Francisco finds itself in an awkward place in that it has been a leading voice for environmental change in this country, and yet it has this odd sweetheart deal from the last century that keeps it stuck in the last century in many respects. So if any set of voters is going to change, it's going to be San Francisco. And I think it's one of those things where there's a lot of opposition to us, but as soon as we get a crack in the dam, you'll see it open up very quickly. So yes, I absolutely believe that it'll happen in our lifetime.
Mike, I want to thank you for having us here today, and thank you for appearing on the program, and we wish you the absolute best of luck with the effort. Looking forward to Muir's March. I hope we can send some folks from San Diego your way.
Oh, Tommy, that would be terrific. It would be wonderful to have a San Diego contingent. And again, the website is muirsmarch.org.
muirsmarch.org, and also hetchhetchy.org.
That's right.
Mike Marshall, take care, and we'll talk to you next time.
Great. Thanks, Tommy.
That's going to wrap things up for this week's edition of Tree Huggers International. I'm Tommy Howe. Many thanks again to Mike Marshall, the Executive Director of Restore Hetch Hetchy in San Francisco. Restore Hetch Hetchy's annual Muir's March event is happening July 29th through August 4th. And you can get more information at muirsmarch.org. 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 Mike just mentioned it. You can also check out HetchHetchy.org. That's the root website for Restore Hetch Hetchy. That's HetchHetchy.org. Again, the phone number, too, for Restore Hetch Hetchy in San Francisco is 415-956-0401. For more information on Tree Huggers International and to hear previous editions of the show, including full episodes, go to the Tree Huggers International website at treehuggersintl. You can find podcasts there. You can also access the Tree Huggers International page via the FM 949 website at fm949sd.com. Also, you can find social media for Tree Huggers International at Twitter and Facebook, and our Twitter account is at treehuggersintl. INTL. Tree Huggers International content is also available on iTunes. This is Tommy Howe for Tree Huggers International. We'll be back same time next Sunday morning with another take on natural science and environmental affairs as we continue our mission to preserve parks, wilderness, and special places on Tree Huggers International. Thanks for making us a part of your Sunday morning, and enjoy the rest of your weekend. Be well.